Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast, an independent Formula One podcast that aims to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute, and a wide array of F1 subject matter experts that cover every aspect of F1, from racing to politics, tech, news and business. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so we can play this with kids in the background or at work. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready. And yeah, I know you just want me to shut up so you can hear from Joe, but I must get some housekeeping out of the way for you fine listeners, because there's a lot coming up. Save the date, guys. Missed Apex Podcast is going live. We will be recording a live podcast and you're invited to come along. It will be in London on July the 14th. It will be free to come along and there will be podcasting quizzes and a chance to meet the Missed Apex crew, including me, Bradley Philpott, Jeansy, Sparkles, Summers F1 and more, and have some beers with us. All you have to do is email spannersready@gmail.com and say that you're interested. Just one word if you want, interested. I'll add you to the mailing list, and when all the details are decided, I will tell you them. And there's one more save the date. Missed Apex Podcast is karting at Daytona Milton Keynes on June the 30th. Details will be post-show, but email me again, spannersready@gmail.com, and I'll add you to the list. Last time we had 10 on the waiting list, so get in quick. Now then, sorry, this week I am joined by Paddock Talisman Joe Lights Out Saywood. How's it going, Joe?
Oh, what the hell? Yeah, I'll be a talisman. I thought that was something that was sort of tacked onto a sort of Irishman's coat or something.
I just look in the thesaurus for, like, other words for good.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Talisman seems like a load of old rubbish to me, but what the hell? What the hell? I'll accept any kind of abuse. I can't come to either of your events, by the way.
Oh, that's a shame, Joe.
One of them's on the Austrian Grand Prix weekend, yes. So duh. And the other one is my only weekend off in about 5 weeks, so I'm going home, otherwise I'll be in trouble.
Now, I Little Bird says that might be your birthday, Joe. Is it a big one?
Is it a big birthday? My birthday is always big. I live in France and it's on July the 14th, so I always have my own firework displays.
Handy. I was just inspired, though, by your live events, Joe. I mean, we're going for 20 folk and not 200, but I think I'm going to copy your wine-based speaking technique.
You mean I drink a lot and everyone else listens? That seems like a good plan to me.
I mean, it was an impressive amount, to be fair. I don't think I could stand while doing that.
Well, old habits die hard, I suppose. It was completely and utterly, it doesn't have any effect on me anymore, so there you are.
It's a shame you can't make it, because surely you can't think of anything better than sitting in a room listening to me trying to be entertaining.
Well, I can think of a couple of things, but there you are. You know, what the hell?
Joe, it's really, really hot here in the UK, so if I seem slightly different, I did drag my family to the pub once I realised how hot it was going to be and said, right, you guys play on the swings, Daddy's having a beer. Have you enjoyed the French sunshine?
I have, yes, and I've been imbibing myself, so there we are. I dare say we can get wild and wacky. In fact, I need a lot more than that to get wild and wacky, but there you are. So
I can't imagine the amount of alcohol it would take to make you wild and wacky, Joe. I hope to find out one day.
Well, actually, I'm told that this time last year in Baku, I arrived at great speed to the welcome party and managed to down a lot of alcohol in a very short time, and apparently I was quite lively thereafter. But I try to avoid it because it does make the rest of the weekend rather complicated.
Yeah, everything's just that little bit harder for that few hours of fun, isn't it?
Well, you're a younger man than I am, so I'll take your word for it. But I have to say that recovery periods as you get older get harder.
I do feel like I've gone over some thresholds in that department. I am trying to push through it bravely, though. But, Joe, we have just had two absolutely stonking races since we spoke to you last, and it's something that I've been banging on about since the end of the Bahrain Grand Prix, but it's two modern tracks and two absolute stonkers. I don't think any old-style track, Barcelona, Hungary, Silverstone maybe, Monaco, would have delivered the two races we've seen there with modern F1 cars.
Completely disagree with that. Spa would have done it. Suzuka would have done it. I think that I don't think it's got anything to do with the age of the track. It's just, you know, that, as I've said before, it's not rocket scientists. There must be a way of studying which tracks allow overtaking and then replicating the necessary criteria so that all tracks can have overtaken. Now, maybe you can't do that in places like Monaco, but it's to do with a number of different things. It's to do with corner profiles. It's to do with camber. It's to do with tarmac quality. It's to do with lots of different things. But at the end of the day, some tracks you can overtake and some tracks you can't. And there must be a science behind it. So maybe we're wasting our time, all this effort going into cars. We should be looking at circuits.
No, oh, I absolutely agree. But isn't that kind of the philosophy of the Tilkadromes, where they were trying to design these tracks specifically for racing? Whether or not it succeeded or not is another thing.
Well, there might be better people qualified than Tilke to do that. But as Tilke had a monopoly, which is a bit odd. However, the world has changed. Tilke may not have a monopoly in the modern era. There are other people who appear to be quite good at designing racetracks. So we'll have to see how it goes. Not that I think that many new racetracks are going to get built in the current era, but I'd like to see some revamps of some of the tracks where overtaking is next to impossible.
Joe disagreeing with spanners, Michael Howlin says. Familiarity is comforting sometimes. Hello to the live chat room. You can find us on YouTube by searching Missed Apex Podcast, clicking the little bell and you'll get a notification every time we go live. What could we do to places like, say, for example, Silverstone, if we wanted to bring them up into the modern era? Are you talking about, like, you're fundamentally changing the track layouts, or, you know, little tweaks here and there?
What's wrong with Silverstone?
Silverstone's a bad example. Let's go for Barcelona, where they end up following each other pretty much year on year.
Well, the best thing to do in Barcelona is to use some bulldozers, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's logical. You have to, you know, if you work out what you need to have and then you put it in place. The only reason you can't put it in place is if there is no possibility to do it. So, for example, at Suzuka, you can't put more runoff in the wiggly bits up the hill because it's just not possible. There's no space to do it. Monaco, there's no space.
Mm-hmm.
I did see something the other day saying that the Prince Albert of Monaco was open to the possibility that when they pull a bit more sea into the land, well, you know, reclaim land, in other words.
Right, got it.
That there might be the possibility of changing the Monaco circuit, which is necessary, to be honest, because the Monaco circuit is dire when it comes to overtaking. Having said that, if you go to Monaco for the first time, you've never been there, you're going to get bowled over by what an amazing thing you're watching. So, you know, one has to balance the two things. You don't want spectacle. The other thing is that overtaking should be difficult, shouldn't be easy. If it's easy, everyone can do it. So I think, you know, what we want is, I thought that in Shanghai it was a good example, where the overtakes were, you know, fairly dramatic because it had to be. Dan Ricciardo slithering down the inside was a bit of a classic. I mean, he didn't miss the other bloke by much, did he?
No, but I think he probably had a bit of faith that Bottas was likely to give him room. Bottas is fairly respectful in those wheel-to-wheel combat situations.
Well, Yes, you could say that. Other people might say that he left the door open, you know, so it's always the way. I think, you know, whatever you do in Formula One, you're going to get someone criticizing. You know, people are now saying that Max Verstappen should change his driving style. Oh, please, no. Oh, please, no. What we don't need is some boring old nobody who does nothing. I'd much rather have Max who crashes occasionally and learns from his mistakes.
Somebody in our panel WhatsApp group during the race, as soon as Verstappen hit Vettel, the comment was, oh, Max, you fool, you wonderful, wonderful fool, because his driving has a character that we need. And like, how many times do we just sit there wishing people would go for it? We can't suddenly start shooting him down when he does it. Or what are we going to tell young drivers who are coming in? The media is going to slate you if you actually try and go racing.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And but, you know, half the racing media hasn't got a clue what it's talking about. So I think that's an important thing to bear in mind. There's a whole load of people who don't even go to races. They don't know what it's to do. You know, they don't actually know what they're looking at. And they certainly don't know the people. So, you know, I think that one just has to generally, I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, one has to ignore most of the media these days because it's just tosh.
But it's easier to write the headline, Max Verstappen shooting over the edge needs to calm down, than Max Verstappen needs to take a measured adjustment to his current driving style in order to ensure future opportunities are taken. You know, that's not a headline grabber, is it?
No, but then again, what's better for the sport?
I think Max Verstappen is brilliant for the sport. I mean, if he's going to get it right, he's going to get it wrong.
He's the best thing we've got at the moment, so... Well, he's not the best thing we've got. We've also got Fernando Alonso, but he's always whining and whinging when things don't go right. So, but he is a monstrous talent as a driver. So,
I don't want to drift too far away from the tracks, because you made a comment there about it looks like we're not going to be getting any new circuits anytime soon. And I think let me give credit where it's due, because I'm not good at doing this in the chat room on the Joe shows, because it's me on my own. I think it's about street circuits. Anyway, the fact is they. Every rumor we hear is a street circuit, London, Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And is the reason they're going there? Is it cheaper to set up on those than it is to?
No, it's more expensive. But you know, look, first of all, let's not judge anything until we know, because I think that Zandvoort's quite likely to come back too, because there's obvious reasons why there should be a Dutch Grand Prix.
Yes,
I think
of course.
At the moment we have got Hanoi, which is going to happen, the Vietnamese Grand Prix, which is basically a Chinese race, or at least that will be the audience. We have Copenhagen trying very hard. Not sure it'll happen, but it's, you know, at the moment they're still cruising along. We have Miami, which seems to be coming along, and it's going to be a street circuit. But, you know, there is logic in having street circuits. You take the racing to the people. It's what Formula E is doing, and the only thing is that Formula E is taking a bad product to the people. Whereas, it is a bad product, sorry. You know, you can try to dress it up, but it's just a very poor product. It's like watching Formula 4 with no noise. You know, it's just hopeless, really.
Be sure to tune in to E Radio Show by Miss Apex Podcast for their recent Rome review.
As it may, you know, you can talk rubbish about that.
Yeah, I know. But I tell you what, I think what it is, we're optimistic about Formula E, and we understand that it's not a finished product, but we are kind of trying to cheerlead it because we think something about it is right and we want something about it to succeed.
Well, I think the answer to that is get a good chemist onto the show and have a chat about batteries. And when you've done that, you can realize that it's just a pipe dream, which might happen. Electric cars, this is, in about 40 years, they might be able to compete. Now, in cities, they can compete before then, but it's still a massive leap forward. Now, admittedly, most of the world's population live in cities, but pretty much everybody who's got a car does want to go outside the cities at some point, and you can't in an electric car. So you've got to find a way of making them better. And the fact is that it's still down to batteries. And, you know, Formula E is only going full race distances in the future because they're loading more batteries in there. The batteries are not getting better at a fast rate. The battery development is between 5% and 8% per year and has been for 1,000 years.
Yeah, it's a point I've been trying to make to people that battery tech is linear. The automotive trade is not going to suddenly produce batteries that are more efficient.
And if they do, it will be involving wildly exotic metals that are very, very difficult to find and very expensive. So, you know, they're trying to find an answer to solutions, but there are no easy solutions.
No. But and I will caution people to say it looks like there's a lot of progress because the automotive industry is maximizing what is available. So what you're seeing is the automotive industry and Formula E catching up and optimizing what is available now rather than pushing it forward. So it's going to plateau at some point.
Or to put it another way, it's the automotive industry trying to throw a curveball at the public to get away from the diesel scandal that Audi and co. have suffered from, and trying to get away from the fact that cars are supposed to be bad by telling everyone they're green and wonderful. And my opinion is that there's an awful lot of flash and bang going on, like the magicians. You know, you hear a bang and a flash and you look that way, but in fact they're doing stuff the other way.
Look into my eyes, not around my eyes, look directly into my eyes. So if we're going to get more street circuits, though, I mean, the street circuits we've got aren't amazing for races unless you factor in the chaos element, like Baku and Singapore.
Baku is a really terrific racetrack. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the country, but it is it's a fantastic racetrack. Singapore is not a great racing circuit, but it is a hell of a spectacle. And you've got to bear in mind that racing is also about spectacle. And night racing around Singapore is something that you just have to go and see. It's like going to see Monaco. You have to say, wow, these guys are nutters. This is what they do. Bahrain was wonderful in that respect because these dusk races they're having now. Okay, it's not a street circuit, but it's good. I mean, then you also have somewhere like Montreal, which is a street circuit without the buildings.
Oh, one day, Joe, one day your chief bag carrier is going to be stricken down with illness and I'll be there like I am every Grand Prix weekend just waiting for that call. I'm ready, Joe. I've been pumping my shoulders and arms. I can lift and carry.
Yeah, but I'm the bag carrier, so...
Don't believe it. Don't believe him. Joe Saywood has an entourage that follows him absolutely everywhere.
No, I don't. I wish. I absolutely wish. That would be great. But if you ever bump into me into the airport, I'm just lugging bags around. That's what I do best. It's my best form of exercise, actually. That's where I get my exercise.
I do notice that when we catch you on these flyaway back-to-back type things, there is a, you know, I'm not saying you look terrible. I'm just saying there's a certain, you can see that the trip has taken it out of you. What's it like with that kind of back-to-back, out to Asia, back to the UK, brace yourself, ready to go out to Baku?
Well, it's been a bit... That's been okay, this one. I've been a bit sleepy in the afternoon sometimes. And
I get that.
yeah, but yeah.
I'm just lazy.
All right, whatever. it's hard, but, you know, the thing is that we often don't realize that we're so accustomed to doing it. If a normal person started to do what we do, they would fall apart quite quickly because we're used to doing it. And it's a bit like getting sick. You see new people coming along joining Formula One, and after about 6 months, they tend to get sick because, you know, it's just really knocking it out of them. So you have to have years and years of sort of, you know, building up your strength, I suppose. I don't know what you call it, but building up the ability to do what we do. Without, you know, ending up with just dropping dead, you know. So it is a bit bonkers what we do, but, you know, that's part of the game.
Do you get ill from when you do your audiences with Joe and you've got lots of F1 nerds touching you?
No. I don't get ill from anything apart from stopping running. At the end of the season, when you relax a little bit, you get sick because you've relaxed. And it's a very psychosomatic thing. It is basically when you know you can afford to be ill, you get ill. But if you're in the mid season, you haven't got time to get ill. You might get a snuffle or this, but you don't get really ill. You don't get sort of laid up with flu or anything like that. Can't afford to.
Let's have a look there. European in the chat room says Spa is already trying to block Zandvoort, but they don't have leverage, really. Is there inter-mid-Europe track skullduggery going on?
I've heard it said, yes. No, it's not. They're trying to... Look, if you're Spa, you are surviving on the Verstappen crowd. Before Verstappen came along, they had nothing. And as much as I like Stoffel Van Dorn, I don't think Stoffel's got the same kind of army marching out from Brussels to get excited in the hills, in the hills of the Ardennes. Max's fans, I don't know what the number was last year, but it was like half of Holland was there. So if there is a Dutch Grand Prix, that could, I'm not saying it will, but that could reduce the number of people who would go to Spa. It might not, but, you know, obviously they're worried about that. So they don't particularly want to have a Dutch Grand Prix. Half the people in Holland don't think a Dutch Grand Prix is possible because you have the usual naysayers. But I actually think it is possible. And I think it's something that will happen eventually because I think everybody wants it to happen.
So are we talking like Dick Dastardly type tactics here? What can Spa do to stop it?
Not much.
Right. Make noise and...
Well, they can put up roadblocks, I suppose. But, I don't see anything they can do, to be honest. I think it's just playing a political game and trying to argue that it's not a good idea. I mean, there are other questions to be taken into account. For example, when are all these races going to go onto the calendar? When is Copenhagen going to fit in?
Yeah.
If you look at what we have now, it's already jam-packed. So
Copenhagen has about 3 days of not snow. So,
no, I don't know about that. It seems to me that they seem to have these sort of summer months when it's quite jolly. But I don't know. I haven't been there for about 30 years.
So looking forward to Baku. We just touched on that. The chat room, Sabir T says, thank you, Baku. Artemy X points out that Baku welcomed us all. Do you think we're going to see those fake banners up again with the kind of green screen Baku propaganda? Apart from the racing, are we going to have, you know, more cardboard cutout buildings, do you think, this year?
I mean, it is what it is. They're trying to be something that they're not. And there's always going to be some people who say, well, hang on a minute, it's not really like that. But you've got to take your hats off them for trying, you know.
Yep.
They've got tons and tons of oil. They've got a bit of seafront. Admittedly, I wouldn't swim in the Caspian because I think it glows at night. But, you know, they're trying to do something there for better or for worse. But at least they're trying. So, you know, is it any different to Abu Dhabi who you know, built this racetrack around a fake harbour? Not really. Is it any different to Shanghai, frankly? I mean, yes, it is and it isn't. I mean, they're all different in their own sweet ways. But I tend to think that Formula One should go to places and try to stay above the politics. Now, that's easier said than done, particularly if you feel you're being used as a propaganda tool. But, you know, I don't know the answer to that.
That's fair enough. But I like that you sort of acknowledge the effort of it. I mean, Avikesh in the chat room says, well done, Baku. But Sabre T is also saying, Joe, you're going to be happy about Paul Ricard, a short trip from your home. That's going to cut down on your travel, isn't it?
No. No. Paul Ricard is further than Silverstone.
Oh, is it? Oh, no.
For me, because, you know, France is a big country. And to go down to Paul Ricard is not very different from going to Monza, to be honest, or Monaco. So will it be a good event? That's another question. Paul Ricard has a problem it had in 1991 when we last went there, or 1990, I can't remember which year. But it has shocking access roads. And there were monstrous traffic jams. And it's not really, it's nothing different. Nothing has changed. If anything, there'll be more people trying to get up their road. So, you know, if they can pull it off, fine. I don't see that as being a long-term future. It's a sort of leftover from the Bernie era deal. And it doesn't really fit into the whole concept of Liberty Media taking racing to the people. They will have a street festival in Marseille, which is...
Ooh.
Quite a long way away.
So like London Live, but Marseille Live?
I suppose it's a bit like London Live with Silverstone, but the distance, I think, is further. I mean, not as big as they're going to have one in Berlin for Hockenheim. So that's a pretty major hike across country. And the other one is Miami for Austin. So, you know, what they're trying to do is raise, they're trying to raise the awareness of Formula One in individual countries. So.
My good effort. Tell you what, we've got some questions from the chat room, I think, which will make a good topic about the last two races. I am dying to get your opinion on Daniel Ricciardo, because I think we talked pre-season about what we thought he would be up to. I think, if I recall, you were saying he needs to stop thinking about other teams and concentrate on beating Max Verstappen, which he did on the weekend by being less outrageous, biding his time a little bit more and not crashing into Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel. But I don't want to be a party pooper, but if you look at it, just step back a little, Red Bull as a team did a blinding call, which got them the tyre delta to get up to the front. Daniel Ricciardo was still the second Red Bull. It was still Max Verstappen's to lose, which he did. So, you know, apart from the fact he's just won a race, where does that kind of put him now in the F1 market?
I don't think it's really... The people who are going to decide on his future will be looking at those things, and they will recognize exactly what the situation is. Now, Daniel's a good guy. He's a very good racing driver. He's just in the team against Max Verstappen, which makes him look less good than he is. He's also a great character, which is important. People may think it's disgusting to drink champagne out of a boot, but I quite like the idea. I think it's funny. I don't think you'd kill anybody, to be honest. I'll drink champagne out of anything, pretty much. But, you know. But it is, you know, it's good that we have people like him. And it's good that, now, he is very good. He's a very, very good racing driver. The problem is that Red Bull is just not quite there. Now, it has better aero than McLaren, and it has better aero than Red Bull at the moment. One assumes that the engines are the same, and therefore, because it's ahead of those other two, one can assume that's down to the chassis. So I think they are once again handicapped by the motors. And, you know, I think that's getting to be very frustrating, because that's a problem that hasn't gone away. And I think that Max is suffering from that, probably more than Daniel, because Daniel is a little bit older.
Yeah.
Actually, quite a lot older.
He's 27, I think.
Yes, well, that's you know, sort of a third of his life older.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's better equipped to deal with that kind of frustration than Max is. Perhaps. Max is he's a pretty cool individual, but, you know, he's disappointed. He wants to get on and win things. And I think you see that in lots of young drivers if they're in the wrong team. And what we have to see is, you know, can Red Bull ever close that gap, or until we have new engines? You know, maybe that's what it's going to take. But in the meantime, they're doing everything they can, but they're still just not close enough. They can only pick up the scraps that fall from the table. They can't get on the table and start, you know, dealing with, or at least we don't think they can, because, to be fair, we've only seen three racetracks, and that may not be the case. That everything is very, very circuit specific these days. The performance, if you look at what's happened with Mercedes and Ferrari, they've been yo-yoing backwards and forwards based on the individual circuit. So, you know, it can, and also based on temperatures as well. It's another element one has to take into account. So I think, you know, perhaps we will see better performance later in the year from Red Bull. But I think fundamentally, Daniel, if he stays where he is, he's got to beat Max.
Yeah.
And if he goes, are they going to take him at Ferrari where he'll destabilize Vettel? Or are they going to replace Bottas or Hamilton with him?
You just said Bottas, like Matt Trumpets does, Bottas. That's good.
What should I say?
I don't know. We're British. We just say it how we want, don't we? Bottas. Can I defend Daniel Ricciardo for a second? Not that you were attacking him.
I was going to say, was I attacking him?
No, not at all. I thought it sort of seemed like I was a little bit. But in Ricciardo's defense, Max Verstappen is kind of going out all or nothing. And it's a bit like, you know, it's a confirmation bias. If you get rid of all the times that he crashes out or punts somebody, which we kind of have done in the past, and point to just Brazil in the wet and go, wow, he's amazing. It's easier to look good like that, because you've almost got double the chances to look good. Daniel Ricciardo is quietly impressive and gets on with it. Now, I think that that's got to be worth something. And I wouldn't mind laying down a bet that Ricciardo beats Verstappen on points this season, even if he doesn't always look fastest. It can't always just be about what your ultimate pace could have been.
No, no, but it's very simple what it's about. It's about the points you get at the end of the year. That's all that matters, which is why Kimi Raikkonen is fundamentally not the right person for that job. The percentages, I did some sums the other day, the percentages of points scored by him as a second driver are just not good enough. Bottas outdid him first season straight away. And that's, you know, the percentage of the whole. So Bottas was at 46 last year, and I think Kimi was at 36. But in the first year at Ferrari, Kimi was at 25, you know. A second driver should be getting close to 50. You wouldn't expect him to be over 50, obviously, because then he'd be the first driver, wouldn't he? But, 46, which is what Bottas did last year, is a pretty good score. And that's what the kind of thing you need, because if you're not in the game and not playing part of the strategy, you leave your other driver on his own to fight single-handed. And as we've seen in races this year, you know, sometimes it's useful to have a second driver. I mean, Kimi actually tried to back up Bottas into Vettel over the weekend.
Yeah, tried. he forced him into a tough overtake, didn't he? Yeah.
He succeeded in losing Bottas a lot of time. Not in any dirty way, but just in doing so, he sort of sacrificed his own race a little bit. Oddly enough, with the safety car, it came back into his favor later on. But even then, he still didn't manage to do as good a job as the two Red Bullies. Well, yeah. one of the Red Bullies and the other Red Bully crashing into things. But
you have to say Daniel raced better, and he absolutely deserved that win. And I think that if Max Verstappen is going to really have an introspective look at himself, and he ends up removing that from his personality and his makeup, does he risk losing some ultimate pace? Does he risk losing some of his razzmatazz?
Yes, of course he does.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll cross Max's mind to do that. Max will just go on doing it, and he'll get it right next time, you know. I think the accidents are the cause of frustration more than anything else. I don't think it's about talent. I don't think it's about anything other than, oh God, I just need to win.
I'm just glad I wasn't on telly when I was 20 trying to do my thing. That's all I can say. I've got a question from Matt Lyons. He says, Spanners, is it too obvious to ask Joe? All my questions are obvious. What's going on with the tyres this year? The main reason for his question is the Mercedes struggle. Now, this is the elephant in the room. Lewis Hamilton, four-time world champion. I don't think Bottas suddenly became much faster than Lewis Hamilton in the course of a weekend. It's clear that Lewis Hamilton is in himself struggling. Are the tyres the reason?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, good. Okay.
I would say, well, not just the tyres, it's to do with setup. If your setup's not right, your tyres aren't right. But these tyres have such limited windows that, particularly in the case of the Mercedes, oddly enough, we saw a very good example in qualifying. In Q2, the Mercedes was bang on the pace. And in Q3, they were off the pace again. So, you know, one has to look at the operating windows of these tyres. And it seems that Ferrari have got bigger operating windows than Mercedes does. Now, Mercedes needs to fix that, obviously, because in the races, they're pretty closely matched.
Yeah.
I think. But now in qualifying, whereas last year Mercedes had the advantage, this year it seems that Ferrari does. So, you know, we have to see. Everybody's improving all the time. And, you know, that's the key to it. It's just development, development, development.
Yeah, and we've seen like a few of these kind of struggles if you go down the grid. If you look at Haas, where last season Grosjean was regularly beating Kevin Magnussen, and now it definitely looks like Magnussen's the lead driver. And that was a point raised there by Marcus Maldonado. Ha, nice name.
That may be to do with other questions, not just tyres. It may be to do with the fact that Kevin's learning and moving up and gaining in confidence. It may be the fact that Roma is still struggling. He's just not very keen on the braking situation.
No.
And he's when it's not right, he doesn't seem to be able to get the most out of a car, whereas Kevin just drives around problems a little bit, I think.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I think that, you know, this is one of the joys of Formula One, which is comparing teammates. And you can't just say in a linear fashion, well, he beat him at this point, therefore he's better. Because drivers develop. Drivers become less interested in being in Formula One as they get older, generally speaking. They get other things in life that are more important. You know, tons of money, wicked women, children, boats.
Whenever they announce that an F1 driver has had a baby, I always think, well, that's that then. Like, how can you possibly, A, concentrate on a race when you've been up all night for the week before? And secondly, like, my missus wouldn't let me away for a Grand Prix weekend if she was in the wrong mood with a baby. She'd like, no. I don't care if you've got to clinch the championship in Abu Dhabi. You've got to come home.
Well, I think there may be something to do with large horse-choking wedges of money that may persuade people that it's a good idea that little Fred goes off to motor race occasionally. And I think that, you know, one has to bear in mind that, you know, any woman who tried that on a Formula One drive would generally get slung out the door. You know, these guys are pretty selfish and pretty single-minded. So, however,
it sounds like you're saying that a Formula One driver is a better marriage partner than me. But okay, I'm just going to brush past that. Continue your point. I'm insulted,
I don't think I was saying that at all. I'm saying that, you know, if you're insisting upon something, the chances of you getting thrown out from a womanly point of view are far higher.
Yeah, I'll take what I can get, to be fair. Sorry, I've completely thrown you off, Joe. Why don't we talk about telly? Let's talk about telly for a little bit. You wrote a little blog post about Netflix and F1, but you missed the best headline, surely, which was Netflix and Thrill.
No? I have no idea what that means.
You've missed that pulp culture reference. Okay, let's move swiftly on.
Cultural reference in UK doesn't work to a man who's been abroad too long.
Fair enough. Good point. But Netflix is collaborating with Formula One. I'm taking it that this was kind of inspired by the behind the scenes at McLaren.
Maybe, but I don't really think so. I think it's the fact that Netflix has a massive majority audience in the United States of America, and they don't have anything relating to Formula One. So it serves both parties, really. Netflix are looking for good sports content, and Formula One wants good penetration in the States. So it sort of works for the two. And Amazon have got the Grand Parade or the Great, whatever it's called, you know, the big show.
Grand Tour.
Thank you. Yep. Whatever it's called. Jeremy and the gang doing their thing with loads of money. Now, I can't say I've watched it, but, you know, that seems to be very popular. So they're in season three, I believe. They're filming season three now. So they're obviously doing something right. But, you know, Netflix has got a pile of money to spend and they're looking for good stories. And I think the inside Formula One soap opera is a pretty good option, really.
Yeah, and I'm really happy that these kind of carriers are getting more and more into sport, because it's quite easy to buy up a load of TV series or have something like Westworld or Game of Thrones come out. That's a bad example, Game of Thrones, because that's now TV. Sorry, Sky. But it's easier to do that. The thing that's been protected by this internet over the top, watch what you want, where you want, when you want it over the internet, is live sports. Live sports just hasn't made that transition. But if something like Netflix is getting really interested in Formula One, then you can imagine in 5-10 years that you start having these kind of bespoke a la carte services where you can say, I just want to buy F1 for £4.
But you can buy F1 for £4 in Formula One's own over-the-top service in a lot of countries.
Not in this one.
No, not in that one, but in time it will come. And anyway, listen, get a VPN and get it sorted because you'll be able to do it.
Joe, obviously you don't keep up on the Twitters. F1 have clearly said it will be VPN-proof, so that'll be that.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, Chinese say that China is VPN-proof and it's not. You can always find a way out. So, you know, it's all very well saying that, but show me the technology that will stop it.
No, it's bonkers. I mean, there will be forums and websites dedicated to telling you exactly how to beat the VPN. On that, and I'm sure that F1 will bother taking the time and energy it will take to shut those guys down. Speaking of being shut down, last season you were complaining a lot about Ferrari closing the door and not letting anybody in, but they're winning this year. So surely that means...
And it hasn't made any difference.
It hasn't made any difference. They haven't opened the door with Arriba Venne coming out, singing and dancing, hugging the media.
No. The only thing that's happened so far is that the chairman has put out a press release after they win a race, which I instantly throw in the virtual rubbish because I don't believe in helping him if he won't help us. So he can go screw himself.
Joe, just stop sitting on the fence, will you? Just say what you think for once. Have an opinion.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just happen to think that he's brainless and he's been very successful running the Fiat company. But if he's running an entertainment business, he has to understand, and a media entertainment business, he has to understand that he's dealing with the media, first of all, and he's dealing with entertainment, and he is providing neither. So.
Well, he can't really complain if guys like you are not happy, given that you're basically not allowed to do 1/10 of your job.
No, but that's not the point. The point is that you know, there are great stories at Ferrari. Mattia Binotto has done a fantastic job in getting this to be a competitive team. We're not allowed to talk to him, you know. The drivers are coming. Kimi might as well talk to the trees or to an ice cream, you know, for all the value it has. Sebastian's an intelligent guy, but he's so protected that, you know, he barely ever does anything with anybody, and it's wrong. And you know, Arriva Benny is no idiot. No, he was in a press conference the other day, which was a most extraordinary thing, and he quoted Bertolt Brecht. Now, Bertolt Brecht, you know, for your average Formula One media guy, that's about, you know, over the top of your head as rocket science, whatever, you know. So here is a man who's clearly intelligent and obviously, or it's becoming more obvious to me, that Arriva Benny is not the man in putting the media embargo in place. Because he worked in a cigarette company. He knows how to communicate. He's been selling cigarettes for a lot of years. And he knows he got to be a president of a vice president or a deputy, but whatever. He got to be a big banana in Philip Morris, and it wasn't by accident because he knew how to communicate. So he's in another job. He's obviously in a difficult situation. You know, he scowls and he does the sort of Heathcliff stuff very well. But, you know, the fact is that they could have a much better story. They could have a lot more support if they played ball. People want to like Ferrari. It's just that sometimes Ferrari is just behaves in an idiotic fashion. And this is one occasion when it's doing it. Incidentally, when I say things like that or write anything bad about Ferrari, I get zillion abusive emails, texts, whatever, from Italians saying I'm biased and bloody, bloody. But I'm not at all. I'm just very happy when Ferrari actually joins the rest of the planet. Usually, Ferrari is very successful when foreigners are running it, but that's another story.
I have no strong opinions about Ferrari fans one way or another. Thanks for listening to Missed Apex Podcast. Mark in the chat room there says, F1 journalist Joe Saywood in strong opinion, shocker. Yeah, we don't have him on for his looks. Sorry, Joe. Okay, talking about some Ferrari hopefuls, we have young Leclerc there at Sauber. At the moment, looking like he's not quite getting the measure of Marcus Ericsson. It's three races in, but I've had quite a lot of correspondence from listeners saying, see, Marcus Ericsson's not bad at all. And actually, I think people may have been expecting a bit too much from a rookie, but people are disappointed that he hasn't come on the scene and just exploded.
Why? I mean, it was fairly clear that he wasn't going to explode, I thought, anyway. You know, Marcus is not bad. Marcus is okay. He's a decent peddler. He's not world championship material, but he is a decent peddler, and he's the best Swede they've been in for a while. So, you know, good for him. And Leclerc, maybe he came out of Formula 2 with a little bit too much
Hype
is a good word, yes. Yeah, too much hype. And, you know, he's got to learn a lot of stuff. So he's going through the process of learning. Ultimately, will he be faster? We'll have to wait and see. I would think he possibly will be. But Marx has got a lot of years of experience as well now. So there's a huge amount in Formula 1 from experience. And I think people need to understand that with the exception of Max Verstappen, who was a quite exceptional talent, who went into a very good car as well, by the way.
Yeah.
And was lucky too. Let's face that. His first victory was fundamentally massively lucky. But that's the sort of thing you have to have that makes you move on up the ladder, and it gives you confidence. The other thing is confidence. Confidence is so important to drivers. Those who've got it gain time, and those who haven't got it don't.
So someone said to me, it's too hard for rookies to come in because there's no testing. But surely if you're coming into the premium motorsport against 19 established F1 drivers, that's supposed to be difficult, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is. It's never been easy to get into Formula One and get competitive. It's never, ever been easy. Okay? It's as simple as that. You know, you're up against the best. It's, you know, you can make the speech out of Top Gun, you know, the best of the bestie, blah, 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 you know.
Let's do that. Yes. Top Gun. Come on, let's watch Top Gun, everyone.
But it's that kind of a thing. They are the best of the best. And you've got to fight your way to the top. And, you know, if you're a Nico Hülkenberg and you're still fighting your way to the top, and you may never make it, you know, because he's been around for such a long time and people are sort of looking over his shoulder now and looking at these young kids, and he's probably thinking to himself, well, that's not fair.
They don't want to look too far past him at the moment. I mean, he's making signs look ordinary and he's the best of the rest by far.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Well, is he? I mean, at the moment he's done well, but I think when the McLaren gets a bit more sorted out, I think we'll probably see Fernando kicking in there.
Yes, I'm sure McLaren will be at the top any minute now, as we've been waiting for since 2013. It's any race now, isn't it?
No, it takes time. They have a recovery period to deal with. They have to remember they are one of only two teams that changed engines. So, you know, changing engines is a big deal. You may not think it is, but it is a big deal. So we have to give them a bit of time. And they're saying, you know, we'll see in Barcelona when we get the next upgrade. And everybody will have an upgrade. Everyone will have an upgrade.
But isn't McLaren's a bit different? Isn't like this what they meant to start the season with? They've essentially been running last year's chassis with the Renault.
I don't know if you can say that. But I think what you are looking at a situation where they've learned a lot because they had a new combination of stuff. They learned a lot in testing. It takes time to produce all the bits and pieces, and that's what they're doing. So, you know, we'll see. We will see how much they can close the gap and how much they'll be on the case of Red Bull. That's the ultimate. Red Bull and Renault, you'll see with the three of them, pretty much it'll be a decent judge of which chassis is better.
Joe, do you think we can fix F1? Would you mind taking a few minutes at the end of the show here to fix F1 with me?
But it's not broken.
Well, they were all getting together and deciding what to do.
No, look, the Formula One is not broken. Formula One is a fantastic show, which you've seen three times. I would say, okay, some people argue that Melbourne wasn't great, but I thought it was very interesting. There was a big crowds wherever we've been going. Formula One is not broken. Formula One is doing very well. What they're trying to do now with their commercial proposals is make it better. So, well, and their commercial proposals are very, very sensible. You take money away from people who don't need it and you push it in the direction of the people who do need it. You have a budget cap, so the big teams have to slim down. And guess what? The talent will go across to the small teams. So you will find who can afford to buy the talent now, because it's a balancing of money and a balancing of talent.
Wait. Budget cap. How likely is that?
I'd say it's very likely.
Really? Because I feel like I've been hearing this my whole adult life, that they're going to restrict spending in Formula One.
Yeah, but that was in the days of Bernie Ecclestone, and Bernie Ecclestone had no desire to do anything apart from let the people at the top win. All he wanted to do was make more money, okay? These guys want to make a better show. Now, their argument is, if Ferrari and Mercedes want to go off and do something else, they're quite welcome to go and do it. But this is what we want. We want a better show. We want a more competitive championship. And if you start getting the cycle going up as opposed to the cycle going down, it's happening in IndyCar racing at the moment. IndyCar racing is a much smaller game than Formula One, but everything in IndyCar is spiraling upwards at the moment. And that doesn't mean it's going to take over the world and challenge Formula One. It just means that it's doing better than it was. And that is really good. They've got new cars, got a new generation of drivers. The racing is good. They've got a TV deal coming. All these things help. And all Formula One is doing is going through a sort of redefining of what's important. Now, you can have Mr. Marchionne banging on about how they'll leave. Well, go. Don't rattle on about it. Go away and find out why Formula One and Ferrari have been together all these years. Because believe me, if Ferrari leave Formula One, Mr. Marchionne will get a bullet. And I say that not in a literal bullet sense, I mean in an employment bullet, because they will realize. In fact, I don't think they'll even let him do it, to be honest, because Ferrari is so integrally part of Formula One. I just think it's a rather poor effort at saber rattling. I think I could probably do better.
That got dark for a moment there, Joe. Do you think then Liberty are basically better equipped to stand up to these guys because they've got other stuff and this is a thing that they're doing and they're applying F1 and making it fit into a proper media broadcasting sphere, rather than maybe Bernie Ecclestone was a little bit more insular into F1, like more eggs in that basket?
I think the truth of the matter was that Bernie was always doing deals. That was Bernie's thing. He's doing deals. And the deals always ended up with him getting more money. Now, if that meant he gave Ferrari more money as well, he didn't care that small teams went bust. But that is the bottom line. When Ferrari got all this extra money, small teams went out of business because there was no money to support them. So, Ferrari can't hold up their hands and say our hands are clean. They're not clean. They took the money that would have kept other teams going. So they might say the other teams are irrelevant. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But the fact is that the sport would be better off with 12 competitive teams.
Yeah.
And if Ferrari's not one of them, well, that's just life.
Well, is this bad news, though, for people who are employed as, say, F1 engineers? Because if Mercedes have to go from, 1,500 people to 500, does that not mean that basically the top three teams' engineers are basically it? Everyone at a smaller team is going to have to get back in line waiting for a job.
No, it doesn't mean that at all, because the smaller teams, because of redistribution of money, the smaller teams will take on other people.
So it'll just balance the amount of staff and expertise.
You have a balancing of money and you have a balancing of talent. And if you have the balancing of the two at the same time, it works and everybody gets better. And now, who comes out on top is another matter. But what's important is, and it fits with the car industry, ethics as well, ethics being the wrong word, ethos, which is results should be based on cost effectiveness, not on who's got the most money. And that's what's wrong. If there's anything wrong with Formula One at the moment, it's the fact that the big teams are just about throwing more money at the problem. Now, if you can do what Force India does on the budget Force India does it at, then you're impressive. And, for me, Force India is a lot more impressive than some of the other teams, because what they're doing it in terms of budget and what they're producing in terms of results is spectacular.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, not particularly this year so far.
Okay, Haas, whatever, you know, you use Force India won't be far away. when they get their new package on, they won't be far off. And on certain tracks, they'll be really on it.
So. Now, I do have a dog in this fight. I've got a big bet of a beer and a cookie with Anil Palmer off our panel. I want Force India, and I think they... before the season, I thought they were going to come and trump Renault. So are you giving me some hope that Force India are going to come in with a real midfield package?
Yeah, but what was your bet for?
That Force India would beat Renault is what I was betting, and it was for a beer and a cookie.
That'll be a tough one, I would say. But certainly Renault should be fourth.
You think?
Yes, they should.
Ooh. So they're not going to be challenged by what are looking more and more like customer teams like Haas and Toro Rosso. Like Haas, you know, being accused of having a Ferrari and, you know, maybe
which
like...
Which has been completely debunked, by the way. It's just only people banging on about it, a journalist with nothing else to write about. Toro Rosso's sort of 5 minutes of glory. I'm a little bit at a loss to understand what happened there, but they just got it all right that one weekend. When they went to China, it all got it all wrong, and it was a complete mess, not to mention the collision between one another, which was a classic moment. I would love the cameras to have cut to Franz Tost's face at that point. Maybe they did. I don't know. I was probably looking the other way. But, you know, it's like sort of the ultimate balloon with a pin stuck in it, I would have thought.
Well, they kind of said, it was a misunderstanding. Do you think that's genuine, or were they just closing ranks and going?
No. I mean, you can't be that incompetent. I mean, Gasly just literally just drove straight into it. To Hartley, and that's, you know, Gasly's not incompetent, not like that.
Yeah, it's definitely an unfortunate error for two
relatively the people who are doing the least impressive job at the moment, sadly, is Williams. It pains me to say that, but it is the situation. It's just not very good.
Okay, so let's get to the core of that, because we've had loads of Slack room questions about Williams, and we've actually had quite a big heated debate. Now, from my point of view, there is one big, obvious, glaring problem, which is that you have a rookie and your lead driver is Lance Stroll. I don't want to do him down, but he was clearly not at the same pace as Massa, who really probably wasn't the same pace as Bottas in 2016. Now, if you could buy a second of pace in qualifying, you would, wouldn't you? Haven't we reached the crossover point here where the paid driver is really impacting? I'm not saying it's their only problem, but it's a big obvious one.
There is probably a problem there, because I actually think Sorokin's quite good, but he doesn't have the experience. So, and Lance, well, this is his chance to prove everyone wrong, and thus far he's not doing it. So, you know, we have to look at that as being one of the explanations. Clearly, the car's not as good as it was last year, or everybody else has caught up and gone away from them, and they haven't. It takes time to change things, but I'm not inspired by it at the moment, and it worries me. Having said that, today they came out with their financial results for last year, and, you know, they're better than the year before, which is not surprising, because last year they had the year before they had the additional bonus of Bottas being bought out of his contract. And last year they had the additional money of coming in from Stroll. So it'll be interesting to see what their financial results are like next year, when the prize money will go down if they don't start getting some results. And I'm not sure the Stroll money will keep coming in at the same kind of levels either. So.
Yeah, and surely they're damaging their reputation a little bit, which can't help sponsorship. Not that I'm an expert in these things.
Well, there is no sponsorship anymore in Formula One. I don't know if anyone's noticed that. You know, it's all very well saying we're going to have this, that, and the other, but you look at the McLaren. There's nothing on it. You know, there's no the big sponsors that used to happen are not there anymore. Now, that's because of a number of different reasons, one of which is that Formula One fell out of fashion in the sponsorship world. Another is that television is providing most of the money now. So, you know, Formula One teams have to start thinking about how to get money from sponsors in different ways. And they are all doing it. You know, they're all looking at different ways of making things for sponsors that keeps the budgets up. But, you know, the idea of just sort of buy some space on a car and get the coverage is not real anymore.
Joe, thank you for another wonderful hour inside Formula One. Did you know, Joe, that Missed Apex podcast is now attracting about 9,500 consumptions per episode, and that was largely down to you giving us a big boost in May. Missed Apex podcast would like to say a big thank you to you, Joe, for your support and participation.
Can I leap in here and say the following? And that is, if the people who are watching, if people are watching it and enjoying it, go out there and buy Grand Prix Plus magazine, because you will enjoy that too. It is. We did it in 3.5 hours in Shanghai.
How?
Well, it was very interesting, but we did it because we had to get a plane. It's as simple as that. You have a deadline, you've got to hit it. So we were done in 3.5 hours. Now, you get a whole magazine at 3.5 hours after the race happens, with race pictures, with full analysis, with features, with everything you could possibly want. It costs next to nothing. So just sign up and make me happy.
Yep, that's all we want to do, Joe. But if it sometimes takes you 7 hours, and then if you read the GP Plus magazine from Shanghai, there's no drop off in quality. How do you just suddenly go, nah, lads, 3 hours, let's get it done?
Well, it's very simple, which is the fact that a lot of it's done a little bit earlier, which means that I just get a little less sleep. But, yeah, that's how it is. You know, we our record is 2.5 hours. Again, it was a plane that caused us to do it. But, you know, it is we could probably do it 2.5 hours every weekend. I wouldn't want to, because it's not exactly stressful, but it is concentrated, focused work. And concentrated, focused work is hard. It takes it out of you. And for hours on end, too. It's not just sort of bang out a quick article here and there. It's putting together a whole thing. And
yes.
In a difficult environment, too. The press centers are not great. I don't know if you saw, I wrote a post about this cat fight going on behind me between Chinese journalists, which in the end I had to go and sort of instruct people to leave the press office because they were not supposed to be there.
Joe, you're getting in the habit on your blogs of telling half a story. You know that. There's aeroplane stories, press stories. Go on, at least leak me the name on WhatsApp. I am a wall of confidentiality.
But you wouldn't know the names because they're all Chinese people.
Frankie Mao, known as the chairman,
is the only Formula One, proper Formula One journalist who's a regular from China, and he was being aggressed by a bunch of television types who shouldn't have been there. And so I decided that Frankie needed some support, and because these people were behaving badly, they got told to go away. I did it nicely and politely, rather more politely than Frankie did, I can tell you. But you know, they needed to be told, because you know, we don't go to the commentary boxes and bang on tambourines while they're trying to commentate.
Let people do their jobs. Guys, I always say to you in podcast land, the way to get good podcasts is to support them. Now, people do podcasts for a lot of reasons. No one says, here's a pot of gold to make your podcast. If you want Inside F1 to survive and have Joe keep coming here, what better way could there be than to see a big leap in GP Plus subscriptions? Why not also tell Joe that Missed Apex sent you, so I share in some of that glory and we can all bask in the Sayward glow?
What is he on about?
I don't know. I'm just trying to get the attention of the world. Everyone pay attention to me while I say things. Joe, you can be my wingman anytime. Where can people follow you?
On Joe Blogs F1, that's where my blog is, and GrandPrixPlus.com, and the plus has to be written out, PLUS. But if you go there, you can find out. It's £35.99, and you get a whole season of stuff. So
it's nothing.
You know, it makes all the other magazines look like rubbish, to be honest.
And let's not forget my personal glory. Follow me at SpannersReady. Email me anything you like at SpannersReady@gmail.com. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Inside F1 with Bam Bam Sayward. Boom. Joe, don't give me that look. I don't know what I'm doing.
Bam Bam. Isn't that a character in the... Flintstones?
Yeah. I'm just trying to give you... I'll be honest with you. I've got a list of 100 boxer nicknames, and I'm just rolling through them.
Very reasonable. Or silly, one of the two. Anyway, there you go.
I was going to remind you about our karting event, wasn't I? Well, we're going to go for the 30th of June, which is a Grand Prix weekend. Unfortunately, that means we have no chance of getting people like Joe Saywood and Jack Nichols, who said he might come along with the team, but we'll try and catch them another time. This was just the only date that we could get a lot of our panel to come on. But I'm really excited about this event. It's £79, but it's more than a one-shot. The ones we've done in the past have been, you get there, you do your hour on track, one race. Yeah, you know, it's good at the beginning, but you do spend a lot of the time in your position. And I felt like I wanted to kind of mix it up, because you might spend 25 of those 50 minutes just completely on your own without catching up anyone, or the only time you see anybody is when you're lapping a back marker. So I wanted to make it a bit more of an event. So what we're going for is £79, 45 minutes on track, but spread over four sessions. So we're going to have qualifying for 10 minutes and practice. Then we're going to have two heats of 10 minutes, and everyone gets a 15 minute final. So there'll be a good people final, and then there'll be a not so good people final that I will be trying to win. That'll be my target, to win the B final, if you like. You'll score points throughout the day. The top 30 will go into the final and continue to score points. The top point scorer will win there. We'll also have a team event. I have invited other podcasts to come and join us. I don't think we're going to get the four legs, three wheels guys from the Isle of Man. Unfortunately, the dates doesn't work. But we are confident we're getting Norfolk NRF1 to come and join us. And also the fantastically funny guys from 4F1 Sake with Terry Saunders. They're going to bring a team down with some of their listeners as well. But we're going to have 60 slots, so you should be able to get in. But I thought that last time, and we ended up having a waiting list. So make sure you get in quickly. Email me at spannersready@gmail.com and say, I want the karting. I will put you on the list. And when we finalize everything, I will send the details to you, and you can have the first opportunity to come. You can come as an individual, or if you want to be part of a team, you can bring a team of four, or we will put you in a team of four as well. Please don't be put off by coming to these things on your own. We will put you in a team. The people who've come on their own in the past have really enjoyed it. I myself have turned up to events like this and have made friends. Like, I'll be honest with you, I lonelily on my own went to a skeptics convention, I think in 2010, the QED con. Didn't know anyone, but it was just something I wanted to do. I've ended up making some great friends who I go back and see every time that event is on. So if you are on your own, we will put you in a team. And everybody there has things in common. They're all Formula One fans. They all listen to Missed Apex podcast, and they all love a bit of karting. So I really, really hope I'll see you there. June 30th at Milton Keynes, Daytona. We'll make a day of it. Come and see us. It'll be in the afternoon. Yeah. Okay, good. Hang around as well, because on Tuesday, we're going to be speaking to Bob Varsha. And then on the same day, we're going to record another podcast episode with Matthew Carter and Summers F1 debating some F1 tech. That is going to be an epic, epic podcast. Don't miss that. Whatever you do, don't miss that. Then on Sunday, there's a Trumpets time with Matthew Trumpets and Anil Palmer, and they're going to be doing a bit of a review of the European Grand Prix in 1999. And I would suggest, if you can find a way somehow to watch at least the highlights of the European Grand Prix 1999, that show will make a lot more sense. So I would strongly urge you to go and catch up with that a little bit. I think it'll be well worth your time. Then you'll have a bit of context for what they're talking about. Now, when Matt pitches me those trumpet times, I always think, that's not going to be interesting. But he always seems to pull it out of the bag. So I've just got to trust that guy. To be fair, he is absolutely fantastic and brilliant. So tune in for Trumpets time on Sunday, Bob Varsha on Tuesday, Matthew Carter and Summers F1 also on Tuesday. My goodness. That makes it feel like a long, long time for the Baku Grand Prix the following Sunday. But we do have to remember that Baku welcomed us all. Cool. Hope to see you soon, guys. Almost forgot to plug again. Missed Apex Podcast Live, 14th of July. Let me know you want to come. Email me, spannersready@gmail.com. Just tell me. It's free, but all I want to know is how much interest there is. At the moment, I'm thinking there's going to be 10, 20, stretch 25. But if a load of you get in touch and say, no, 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 we'd want to come and watch that and take part in some quizzes, have some drinks with you guys, then I can think about changing the venue I've got in mind. But let me know. Let me know soon. Otherwise, we're going to have limited spaces. All right. Waffled enough, haven't I? Okay, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.